ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। नारायणं नमस्कृत्य नरं चैव नरोत्तमं देवीं सरस्वतीं व्यासं ततो जयमुदीरयेत्। नष्टप्रायेषु अभद्रेषु नित्यं भागवत सेवया भगवती उत्तम श्लोके भक्तिर्भवती नैष्ठिकी। रीडिंग फ्रॉम श्रीमद् भागवतम कैंटो 10 चैप्टर 51 टेक्स्ट 43। वरान वृणीष्व राजर्षे सर्वान् कामान् ददामि ते माम् प्रसन्नो जनः कश्चिन् न भूयो अर्हति शोचितुम्। वरान् वृणीष्व राजर्षे वरान् वृणीष्व राजर्षे सर्वान् कामान् ददामि ते सर्वान् कामान् ददामि ते माम् प्रसन्नो जनः कश्चिन् माम् प्रसन्नो जनः कश्चिन् न भूयोर्हति शोचितुम् न भूयोर्हति चोचितुम्। वरान् वृणीष्व राजर्षे सर्वान् कामान् ददामि ते माम् प्रसन्नो जनः कश्चिन् न भूयोर्हति शोचितुम् वरान् वृणीष्व राजर्षे सर्वान् कामान् ददामि ते माम् प्रसन्नो जनः कश्चिन् न भूयोर्हति शोचितुम्। वरान् वृणीष्व राजर्षे सर्वान् कामान् ददामि ते माम् प्रसन्नो जनः कश्चिन् न भूयोर्हति शोचितुम्। वरान् वृणीष्व राजर्षे सर्वान् कामान् ददामि ते माम् प्रसन्नो जनः कश्चिन् न रोहति शोचितुम्। वरान् वृणीष्व राजर्षे सर्वान् कामान् ददामि ते माम् प्रसन्नो जनः कश्चिन् मा भूयोरति शोचितुम्। माताजी वरान् वृणीष्व राजर्षे सर्वान् कामान् ददामि ते माम् प्रसन्नो जनः कश्चिन् मा भूयोरति शोचितुम्। द वर्ड फॉर मी वर्ड मीनिंग इज एज फॉलोज। वरान् बेनेडिक्शंस वृणीष्व जस्ट चूज राजर्षे ओ सेंटली किंग सर्वान् ऑल कामान् desirable things. Dadami, I give. Te, to you. Mam, me. Prasannaha, having satisfied. Janaha, person. Kaschit, any. Nabhuyaha, never again. Arhati, needs. Shochitum, to lament. Translation and purport by the disciples of Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. Translation. Now choose some benedictions from me, O saintly king. I will fulfill all your desires. One who has satisfied me need never again lament. Purport. The acharyas explain that we lament when we feel incomplete, when we have lost something, or when we fail to achieve something desirable. One who has satisfied Krishna and thus attained the Lord's mercy will never be troubled in these ways. Lord Krishna is the reservoir of all pleasure, and he enjoys sharing his spiritual bliss with all living beings. We need only cooperate with the Supreme Lord. Vandeyam Shri Guru Shri Juta Padakamalam Shri Gurun Vaishnavamscha Shri Rupam Sagrajatam Sahagana Raghunathanvitam Tam Sajivam Sadvaitam Savadutam Parijana Sahitam Krishna Chaitanya Devam Shri Radha Krishna Padan Sahagana Lalita Sri Vishakhan Vitamscha Om Jnanat Mirandasya Jnananjana Shalakaya Chakshurun Militam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Sri Chaitanya Mano Bishtam Stapitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Kadamayam Tadati Sva Padantikam Nama Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prishtaya Bhutale Srimate Bhakti Vedanta Swami Niti Namine Namaste Saraswate Deve Gauravani Pracharine Nirvishesha Shunyavadi Paschatya Deshatarine Vanchakalpatarubhyascha Kripasindubhyevacha Patitanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha Jai Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Advaita Gadadhar Sri Vasadi Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna 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 Hare Hare Rama Rama Hare 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 Krishna 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 Rama Rama Hare 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 Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare A very similar verse comes in this chapter, verse 20. We see the demigods telling King Muchakunda, Varam Vrinishva Bhadram Te. My dear king, you have any desires to be fulfilled? You want any boons? Vara Varadan, a fairly easy word to understand. Puranic literature mainly deals with Vardhan and Shap. Mostly we see people, those who are engaged in what we know as ritualistic religion, Satyanarayan Katha or Devi Katha. Mostly somebody did something, the Lord was very happy, and he said, what's your desire? And it's almost as if that's the climax, that's the highest point, that you, the worshipper, the upasak, he does something, and the upasya devata, the worshipable deity, he comes and says, anything, whatever you want, I can give you. And then the listeners, they put themselves in the spot, in the same place, as if, what would I do if I had such an opportunity? Most of our fairy tales are also filled with these kind of things. It's like a people who analyze these stories, they talk in terms of the unfulfilled subconscious thing. You do that either through fairy tales or through Puranic tales. But it's a fact that we would like to have that opportunity where somebody says, anything, whatever you wish, and I can give you. I used to read, I still do read these fairy tales from that point of view, but only when you read Prabhupada's books, you come to the understanding that the deity is fit to give you anything. Are you fit as a worshipper? Do you have the qualification to beg? You may say, beg? I don't think there is any qualification required to beg. You just go and say, give me everything. There is a story of a king, small king. He lost his kingdom and his queen was kidnapped. And he was made blind. So, he's blind, no kingdom, and his queen is kidnapped. And he does some kind of tapasya or something. And it doesn't mention God, but somebody, some demigod or whatever, who came before him said, I can fulfill only one boon. He says, what's your problem? So he said, I am blind, I need my kingdom, and I need my queen. So he said, no, only one chance allowed, choose one. What would you choose if you were in the place of the king? I'm sure you would all be thinking, queen, obviously queen is required. But what to do with a queen which is no kingdom? She will require a palace. She won't be staying just like that in a mud hut or somewhere. Alright, kingdom, but what's a kingdom without a queen? And what's a kingdom without queen and no sight? So, this fellow is very smart. That's why he's put in that folk story. He says, alright, only one boon I request. Standing on the terrace of my palace with my son by my side, I should be able to see my kingdom. And he was said, okay, tathastu. And then the person who gave the boon realized, hey, this is not just one boon, it is three in one. This fellow wants to stand on his palace, see his kingdom, that means the kingdom has to be there. For seeing the kingdom, he has to have eyesight. And he wants his son by his side. That means he has to have a queen also. So anyway, it meant for kids. It was like good reading. Okay, this man was really smart. He didn't choose a single thing. Taking that cue, taking this hint from this, what do devotees ask when they are given this kind of a chance? We don't find later Muchukunda asking from Krishna anything like, I want some more time for resting, or I want, this time don't send any Kalyavanas or whatever, but I just want clear cut, uninterrupted rest period. No. Another significant point is, in verse number 20 of this 51st chapter,
The demigods say, my dear king, ask anything except liberation, because we can't give that. They're very clear. They don't claim that we can also give you liberation from this material atmosphere. They very specifically say that that's the prerogative of the Supreme Lord Vishnu alone. None but him can give liberation. This verse mainly deals with lamenting. The last word here, shochitum, shoka, shocha, both are similar. So first we will visit the Bhagavad Gita, second chapter, where there's a very interesting series of statements made by Lord Krishna. First of all, while giving Arjuna the first installment of his mercy as a spiritual master, Arjuna himself has sort of requested Krishna, accept me as a disciple, not as a friend. And the first, it was like a slap practically. Krishna says that you are speaking learned words, but you are lamenting like a fool. You are just nanu sochanti pandita. Those who are really learned, they don't lament like this. Now, from Arjuna's point of view, Arjuna is feeling, you don't understand. My situation is very, very precarious. Your name is Madhusudan. You have killed enemies. You have killed demons. Did you ever come across a situation where you had to kill your own grandfather or your own spiritual master, your teacher? You never did that. Why do you engage me in this ghastly warfare? Now, this is a solid platform for some serious philosophical thinking. So, this is one thing which Prabhupada used many times in his lectures. Antavanta ime deha nitya syokta sharirinaha. I found it at least 3-4 times in Prabhupada's lectures. One question which I had, I don't know whether any of you were having that while reading the Bhagavad Gita. Where does the Bhagavad Gita say that you are not the body and you are the soul? Which particular verse? Where does it say that you are the Atma? And I was happy that after 20 years of reading, I found it one today. Like normally we, in the course of discussion, we get these questions. Where does the Gita say you have to chant 16 rounds? Well, the Gita says chant 24 hours. Satatam kirtayanto. 16 is a discount. It's like a concession given for those who can't do that. So, antavanta ime deha. Vanta is used in the sense of one, like Bhagavan, one who possesses opulence, gunavan, one who possesses guna, qualities, dhanavan, one who possesses dhana, wealth. So, antavanta is that thing which possesses end, that thing which has termination inbuilt into it. No matter how long you try, how much you try, you cannot make the body eternal. Now this is a simple fact. The Gita just tosses these simple facts in the beginning. Serious discussion is much more later. After the 6th chapter, 7th chapter, 9th chapter, 18th chapter, the culmination of the entire advice given by Lord Krishna. But here he says, antavanta ime deha. Every material body is subject to death. Period. No more discussion allowed. It's a fact. Judging by that standard, if we want to know how far today's science and technology has progressed, people are saying we'll make the body eternal. Now just see how deviated they could be from this simple fact of life, that antavanta ime deha nityasya ukta. And something is called nitya. Ukta is being described as sharirina. Sharirina is that thing, object, person or whatever which is staying in the sharir. Like dehi is one who is staying in a deha. A tenant is one who occupies a room. A driver is one who occupies a vehicle. So similarly, sharirina is one who stays in the body. Today this knowledge is simply not taught. Not because it is not there, but because it is not seen as important. So antavanta ime deha nityasyokta sharirinaha. Arjuna is being made to understand this one fundamental premise. The body is perishable. The one inside the body is not. One big professor told Prabhupada, Swamiji, we feel when the body dies, the person inside the body also dies. Now this man happened to be the chairman of an academy of sciences in the USSR, previously Soviet Union. And Prabhupada really hammered him so many times. Not in his presence, of course, but he would later say, big people, big degrees, they occupy big posts, and their knowledge is no less than an animal's knowledge. What to do? I remember many years ago, we had His Grace Abhiram Gopal Thakur Prabhu staying here. He was sick at the end of his lifespan and we needed some plasma for him. So it was at 1 o'clock or something. Suddenly he developed some medical situation and I think it was Dr. Gopal Krishna Prabhu, he said, you have to get it now. So two of us left in the temple vehicle. We went to Wadala, I think Tata Hospital somewhere, I don't remember now. And so this devotee with me was a driver, devotee with me was a doctor. He went and tried to get it. I saw a very interesting thing on the road. A big fat rat was lying dead. A car had gone over it. Very big, very large size, so that you can't miss it. And I knew that the person who is supposed to sell the plasma, he could be sleeping, you have to wake him up. Then he will do the transaction, he will take money, it will be at least 15-20 minutes. So I was down. So, not much traffic. That rat is there in the middle of the street. Another rat, most probably its partner came. And, I don't claim to understand rat language. But did some kind of noise and tried to roll him over. And suddenly there was two lights, that means another vehicle is coming. So this rat who is dead, no response. The one who is alive, he saw that one vehicle is coming and immediately went and hid himself. The car came, went not again over him, went by his side. Again this rat came. And he was trying to push and nudge, and it was like I was thinking, his whole thinking was, what are you doing here in the middle of the road, man? Come on, it's dangerous. Don't stay here. Now who's going to convince the rat that he's dead? No amount of nudging or pushing or convincing, nothing will help. It's the body's body, we say always dead, but there's now the soul has gone away. So every time I hear Prabhupada saying that the simple knowledge is not available for these big scientists, that once the body is dead, you can't bring it back. It was rumored that one big billionaire, he made his billions in the entertainment industry. He told a group of scientists that, I'll give you any money, whatever you want, but make me immortal. After I die, put me in some nitrogen solution or whatever. And that fellow also, they were smart. They sold in the idea that we could actually make you immortal. So, he paid a lot of money. Arrangement was made so that his body could be kept. Now just see who is more foolish. This man, for requesting the scientists to make his body immortal, or the scientists who agreed to do that, and later the relatives, they sued the scientists that no, we need the body for a proper burial. They feared, what if this guy comes out alive again after 20 years? This inheritance which we are getting, he might claim it. The Bhagavatam says, all are fools. Of course, the scientists could be a bit smarter, they got the money at least. But we are living in this kind of fool's paradise, where there is no knowledge. And therefore, without this knowledge, this last word which I said we are going to discuss only on that, lamenting is really lamentable. You can't make a clear decision. You don't get knowledge. You don't know what to do. So lamenting simply begets lamenting. And therefore, interestingly, in the second chapter, verse number 25, 26, 27, 28, there is a gap in between, and 30, a series of verses where Krishna is saying, don't lament. I mean, do anything. Okay, you are the body, but don't lament. You fight for some mundane cause, but don't lament. Because lamenting is nishkriyata. You're not doing anything. Not that doing any kind of action is better than inaction, not in that sense. But Krishna wants to imbibe this, sort of brand this idea on Krishna, Arjuna's mind, that please try to understand. The first logic thing he uses is, you are a kshatriya, correct? It's correct. Where are you? Are you in the kitchen that you are told to cook something and you can't manage that? Are you in a dance academy you are supposed to dance? He did dance when he was in the form of a eunuch. Arjuna went through that, but now he is a full-fledged man. Are you in a music academy you are supposed to play some musical instrument? No! You are in your element. You are a kshatriya for so many years, you wanted to fight. And now here is a Krishna uses the word, and Prabhupada translates very beautifully, unsought. Unsought means this battle is not your doing. Arjuna was not like Banasur, that thousand arms are just itching for action. Like, should I kill this? Should I tomorrow? Not in that sense. He was not like trying to beat anybody up or demolish anything. In fact, Arjuna is at the epitome of manhood, proper male behavior. Very reserved, very, very cultured. 12 years of staying in the forest, 1 year incognito, and that too he was as Brihannala, he was like a half male, half female. So we should not feel that Arjuna was fearing insult or he was afraid of the misery of battle or the trouble of fighting. No way. But his mind was severely lamenting. Why? Later the acharyas explain, Arjuna's mentality is brought down to your and my mentality. We lament like that. Arjuna never has to do that. But because Arjuna volunteered to be put in that situation, the Gita was spoken and the wisdom flowed through. So first point Krishna is making is, you are a kshatriya, this is a battlefield. Any problems with that? No. You are not a mischief monger. You didn't try to fight the battle, or you don't try to poke Like currently there is something going on the border, India and Pakistan. Both parties are saying, you started, no, you started first. So both of them, we know that we can't really say who is not guilty staying here. Something has happened somewhere. But these belligerents, as they are called, belligerent countries, it's always, sometimes there is a cause, sometimes there is no cause. In fact, the Greeks had this kind of wisdom. Trouble at home, war abroad. One king started that. Please try to understand. That's what it is continuing. You have trouble at home. People are asking you too many questions. There is lot of scandals, scams happening. Easy solution. War abroad. Everybody forgets the domestic troubles. If people are clamoring for, we don't get two meals a day. Start a war. They'll be happy if they get one. So this is a low class kind of politics which goes on in Kali Yuga. Arjuna was not like that. Krishna says, happy are those Kshatriyas to whom these opportunity like a righteous war. Why is the Mahabharata war so, why it's repeatedly discussed and why, what's so special about it? Previous to Mahabharata, so many wars were fought. After that, many are fought. Because something wonderful came out of that. Krishna's presence brought out the Bhagavad Gita. That's the main benefit of this Mahabharata war. Then Krishna says, one objection which Arjuna had expressed is, this is sinful, isn't it, Krishna? Killing your own brothers, killing your teachers is sinful. For you it is said, you are just saying, I should do my duty. I will incur sin. Papam avapsisi. I will incur sin. I should be offering flowers to my Pitamaha and my Gurudev. And you are telling me to offer them arrows, pierce their bodies? No way. And Krishna is saying, no. This is a righteous war. Righteous means both parties are trying to understand dharma favors which particular side. The side which will win is dharmic in nature and is upholding dharma. So you subdue your enemy and then you become a servant of dharma. For that purpose you are fighting. If your fight is just to prove, oh, I am correct or you are correct, this is not like some tenant and landlord kind of fight. Both of them could be bribing the judge or all the kind of things which we see nowadays. So because it's a righteous war, Krishna assures Arjuna, even if you kill your superiors, they won't be, you won't be affected by that particular sinful reaction. Last two things which Krishna says is, and remember, you are a honored Kshatriya. You are a decorated warrior, as they say. If you leave this battlefield, people will speak. You are telling me, I feel pity for these people, therefore I am leaving the battlefield. But you know what they will think of you? They will think that you are a coward. And for one who is honored, dishonor is worse than death. These generals will speak in, Krishna uses the word laghavam. Laghav comes from laghu. That means they will speak very cheap things about you. That this fellow, as they say in Hindi, dum daba ke bhag gaya. Keeping the tail between the, whenever a dog puts his tail between the leg, that means he's very afraid. If he's wagging, that means he's very happy. Upright means he's trying to fight. So, a warrior leaving the battlefield with his tail between his legs is, oh, Arjuna, at least don't do that. In fact, Krishna seems to say, at least for the sake of our friendship, don't do that. You don't have anything about yourself, at least think about me. Various ways he tries to make Arjun understand that this is a providence has given you. Yadrichhaya. It has come on its own. All those who were fighting, they had this very clear aim. I die, I go to heavens. I kill somebody or I live, I enjoy this kingdom. Only two things will come out of this. Today nobody can guarantee that kind of thing in a warfare because dharma is not the main question. So that's a big difference. Many people still get confused as to why this thing was spoken in a battlefield when all we need is peace. Kali Yuga mess is not because there is too much of philosophy. There is too less of genuine philosophical understanding. And the first thing, it begins with Antavanta ime deha. The body is perishable. Nityasya ukta sharirinaha. The sharira is always nitya. So what is important? Just use your common sense when we have accidents reported in the newspaper. Two aeroplanes crash or they collide. Do they say that 350 tons of aluminium was destroyed along with 80,000 gallons of high-octane aviation fuel? No. They say 36 people dead. 50 people dead. But why 50? There are 6 billion here. At least in India sometimes people think like that. Big road accident or a boat capsizes in the Ganga, 30 drown. Who cares? We already have more than 1 billion. Of course, we don't condone that. But the fact is, even if one person is injured, that becomes news. Especially India has been criticized for it, that these big time accidents where people die, they don't become news. But in the West, especially, I have seen it, I have seen media people comparing their notes. American newspapers especially, nothing against America, but just it's a matter of fact, like 20 tourists injured, including two Americans. So that's like, you understand where the stress is being made. That means 18 others from any sundry nation taken together. But hey, two Americans were also there. And it's a fact that they really value, that culture has that. We don't have it. It's a fact. We talk in terms of, maybe we are conditioned by, you know, queues everywhere, train, aeroplanes, grocery store, everywhere. We are thinking we would be happier with half the population gone somewhere, we'd be very happy. But no, that's not a spiritual way to think. Certainly, here we are discussing the beginning stage is a lamenting mentality which Krishna is trying to eradicate. In the second chapter, Krishna doesn't give Arjuna a guarantee that I am God, I am your friend, I am on your side, you are going to win. Come on, fight. He says, no. You may win this kingdom and enjoy, or you may go to the heavens and enjoy. You may die. But please, do not engage in lamenting. Lamenting will take you nowhere. I found only one reference in the Veda base, but Prabhupada has mentioned it. Many devotees have expanded because this seems to be taken from some other Vedic literature. Brahman, Kshatriya, Vaishya, Shudra. It is the Shudra and less than them who are more prone to lamenting. We will not go much deeper into that, but just to see how is it possible. A Brahmana is supposed to be knowledgeable. So bodily pain of a different variety, in a sense tapasya, there is no food today, or you say, okay, I'll fast. Or there's not much enough clothes. It's okay, I'll manage with whatever I have. Prabhupada's favorite example was a teacher in Bengal. A zamindar came to him and said,
can I give you something, some donation? So he sort of thought for a moment and said, I have knowledge, I teach these students here. We have a pukur. Almost every Bengali villager would have a small pond in front of his home. I get fresh water. I have some land. I grow rice. There's a tamarind tree which gives tamarind pods and tamarind leaves. So my wife, she cooks, she makes some dal kind of broth or some soup with that tamarind leaves. Rice I get from my village. The students give me some milk. So he's saying, well, what more can I ask from you? Now it was the zamindar's turn to be surprised that this fellow doesn't need anything. I can't give him anything. So Prabhupada said, that was the simplicity of a Brahmana. Happy with the opportunity to teach. A Kshatriya would rule, take taxes, but again would not lament. And a Vaishya, he would try to find out how to make some money, some or other. Again, one of Prabhupada's examples, it was plague in Calcutta, 1910 or 1920s. We don't know whether it's a true story or not. But one Marwadi gentleman, he came to know that the plague has something to do with rats. So he had his people catch rats and sell it to the British government. 1 paisa each. But he made his money. So Prabhupada said, the market goes down, expert Vaishya makes money, market goes up, expert Vaishya makes money. That's a real Vaishya. So these three, they don't lament. Whatever may be the case in this material world, of course we may say, don't they express their unhappiness? That's one thing. Here, the focus on lamenting is, you leave aside everything. Just like Arjuna gave up his bow, arrow, and he says, I can't do anything. Wah, like that. You know, it's like, hey world, look at me, I need some pity. Please, anybody give some pity, this bowl, you know. Say something about me. Oh, I look miserable. Oh, I need this. That's very bad. So that is linked with the Shudra mentality. And last 5 minutes, I was thinking that, is lamenting all bad? So no, there is also a spiritual thing called spiritual emotion. And I found some examples. To begin with is Vyasdeva's lament. He had written all the Vedic literature which he was supposed to do. By the way, there are many Vyasas. A Vyas is like a doctor or a plumber or an engineer. So a Vyas is somebody who expands. Our Vyas Dev, the first personality in our Brahma Sampradaya, his name is Krishna Dvaipayana. He was born in a dweep in island. Badarayan, that also another name. And he is a avatar of Krishna. It is Krishna himself who, because no suitable personality was available, so Krishna had to do the job himself. Many cases, many yugas, Krishna empowers some living entity, but sometimes he gives, sometimes when there is no one available, he does the whole thing himself. So this Vyasadeva, he wrote everything. Unknown to him, there was lamentation in his heart. And like a true dutiful disciple, he came before his guru Narad Muni and said, you, like the sun which goes everywhere, tvam paryatan arkavat, like the sun which goes everywhere, you enter my heart, find out what's my problem and tell it to me, please. That's the ideal disciple who allows the guru to enter the heart and find out what's the problem. So Narad Muni says, you did everything you are supposed to, but where is glorification of Lord Hari?
which is the purpose behind all Vedic knowledge. So now, one literature, all other literatures, they glorify Hari indirectly. Even the Mahabharata, for many passages, in fact, I think Gopinath Prabhu that day mentioned, where Krishna actually makes his appearance as the Supreme Lord, Udyog Parva. Till Draupadi's marriage, that's the time Krishna actually shows that he is something. Otherwise, before that, so many kings and so many pujas and so many vratas, so many things are discussed there. So, Vyasdev was given this dictate. Now, no more wishy-washy, no more beating around the bush. From the very first verse itself, people should know where they are heading. And that's what you have, Srimad Bhagavatam. Janmadyasya yataha. First line says, that personality, who is supposed to be responsible for creation, maintenance and destruction, I meditate on him. He is Satyam Param. Satya, so many things are Satya, but relative. This is Satya Para. Beyond the three phases of time, Bhut, Bhavishya, Vartaman, it is beyond that. Satyam Param Dhimahi. I meditate. From that first verse of the first canto, last verse of the 12th canto, it says, Nama Sankirtana Yasya. Chanting His holy name is the only occupation for humanity. So from the first verse of the first canto, the last verse of the last chapter of 12th canto, Vyasdev was, it was like, this is Vyasdev's delight. This is his heart's joy. It seemed like he wanted to do that, but he had to give all this Vedic literature so that Stri, Shudra, Dvijabandhunam, everybody could understand, everybody could relate to it. So he was very happy that my Guru Maharaj told me and I could do the job accordingly. Then we have Yudhishthira's lament. Yudhishthira Maharaj lamented that, can you imagine what he lamented for? He could not properly serve Dhritarashtra. I mean, you can't have a more cultured personality than Yudhishthira Maharaj. He was responsible for all the miseries which Yudhishthira Maharaj underwent in his life. Dhritarashtra was the one who called him for the gambling match. He lost everything. He gave everything back. Called him again. He lost everything again. Dhritarashtra was the one who practically was the cause behind the Mahabharata war also. We see in the first verse of the Bhagavad Gita, Dharma Kshetre Kurukshetre Samaveta Yuyutsavaha Mamaka Pandavas Chaiva Kima Kurvat Sanjaya. Simple, fairly innocuous, harmless kind of question. But hey, ask the Acharyas. They say, now see from the Acharya's point of view, they understand Dhritarashtra's mind better than you and me, or even Dhritarashtra himself. He seems to say, this Dharma Kshetra is a problem area. I know my sons, they are pakka adharmi, and the Pandavas are dharmic. So Sanjay, won't you think there could be a problem that this place could affect my sons unfavorably? I mean, what are you supposed to do? Choose some other neutral place, you know, dharma neutral place. Dhritarashtra is saying, this place itself is partial towards the Pandavas. They should not be fighting there. It should be even ground, isn't it? So, dharma kshetre, kuru kshetre, samaveta, they have come together, yuyutsavaha, for the sake of a battle. Mamaka, my sons, and the sons of Pandu, hey, all of you are Kuru Vanshas, you are all Kurus. You ever noticed that Parishit Maharaj is called, hey Kuru Shrestha, hey Kuru Nandana. How come Parishit Maharaj becomes Kuru? It's true. They are all descendants of Kuru. But Dhritarashtra's parochial mind, his parochial thinking is selfish mind is saying, my sons are the Kurus and these are the sons of Pandu. So, I mean, this old man is quite crafty, you know. And all his life, he could never do one thing. He could never understand why this Vidura is hell-bent on making me a devotee. So, Vidura, when he is making inquiries about things happening in the palace, he doesn't inquire about the well-being of Dhritarashtra. It's said in the words, Prabhupada says there in the translation, that he knew my brother is a gone case. What's the point in inquiring about him? He's not going to be a devotee anyway. So he was traveling, he's inquiring about, but still see the nature of a devotee. He comes back again and again, the last installment of Vidura's mercy, there are no gentle words. He says, Vishirna Danto Mandagnir. He makes a sort of a medical assessment of his body. He says, all your teeth are loose. You have no digestive power. When you speak, it is only sarag. Here, sarag means every time you cough comes out. Every time you have to speak something, there is a lot of cough. In between some syllables, hardly intelligible, then some more cough. You are living like a dog. Bhima's kitchen, you are eating from his kitchen. Some scraps are thrown from the kitchen and you lap on them like that. Shame on you. Now, see, it's like when a pure devotee's words will hit the mark, we don't know. So that's why Prabhupada said, people should read my books always. Sometimes you may not understand anything. You may find it boring. You may find it tasteless. But one day, that pure vibration of the Acharya will find its mark in your heart. And that day you will be like, oh, it makes sense. So for Dhritarashtra, that last piece of advice made sense. Sudden vairagya, renunciation came on his mind and he left. And next day, Yudhishthira is again lamenting. They cheated me. Hey, mister, what do you mean they cheated you? I wanted to serve them to my best capacity. But now they have gone away. So from the beginning till the end, Yudhishthira never gave up his normal nature. Come what may, calamities or no calamities, he didn't give up his nature. Sri Radha Gopinath ki. One more and I will stop there. Then we have Parikshit lamenting, seeing the condition of Surabhi. He says, how did this happen? How can somebody do this to you? Someone trying to kill you? Again, many times Prabhupada tries to contrast the culture which humanity is supposed to live and what we are having today. That an unscrupulous person is hitting a cow in public and a Rajarshi says, hey, stop it, otherwise I'll kill you. And Prabhupada says, contrast this with state-sponsored slaughterhouses. The state which is supposed to take notice of even a stray incident. This is not happening in the capital. This is, the street is not mentioned, but it is somewhere. King Parikshit is on his tour and he finds something and immediately he says, stop it or otherwise I'll kill you. Prabhupada said, he didn't start a commission of inquiry, let give a big fat report after 3 years and nothing happens. It all goes in the government, archives. So many commissions and so many things have been made. Not like that. Immediate action. He says, that is the duty of a saintly king. To conclude, 4th canto, 30th chapter, 20th verse. 4th 30 20 is a clue to this idea of a Brahma Bhuta. Prachetas are praying that, my dear Lord, anybody who becomes a Brahmabhuta, for him, the daily activities in your service become increasingly fresh. That gave much hope to me. The first Punyatra I attended, I knew I was asking Radha Gidari Prabhu, what do you do? What do you do for 3 days? What do you do for all those days? So he told me, in morning we have Mangalarti for 4 hours. And then we have class for 4 hours. And there's an evening Gaurarti again for 3.5 hours. So I had some pretty good idea as to what to expect. In fact, the second day, and someone is massaging somebody's feet because it was very, very heavy on your body. The next Pune Yatra, I again asked him, will we be doing the same thing again? 4 hours of Mangalati, 4 hours of lecture. He said, yeah, what else can we do? Same thing. Same Krishna Katha, same kind of dancing. The third Pune Yatra, I was sort of testing myself that it is said that Krishna consciousness is always fresh. Nothing is stale. Nitya nava navaya man. Let me observe this third Pune Yatra as a third party observer. What if I have come for the first time? Will I still enjoy it? And I was happy that even in that particular stage, not that I am any better now after 20 years, but at least the years have increased, not the maturity. But I was happy to see that, hey, in Krishna Bhakti, even the same things you do again and again, you do it sincerely, there is a taste in it. Like many times our own devotees have this doubt, why the morning program is stressed so much? I'm very honest. Many times I would see the grihasthas coming and the joy on their face would convince me that this is good to attend Mangalarti every day. Because they would say, kitna maja aaya aaj. Oh, it was so nice kirtan, guru puja and everything, such a nice class. We say, what if I miss class today? Tomorrow is available and day for tomorrow, next month, next year, mandir is not going anywhere, I am not going anywhere, what's the big deal? No, that's like a trap. The Prachetas are saying here that, my dear Lord, the same activities, if one does with care and attention, they give ever increasing joy and they always remain ever fresh. And the culmination of that statement is, therefore a devotee is full and he never laments. He is full. He doesn't rejoice. Now we say, I shouldn't be happy in Krishna consciousness. Like bhakti means always a sullen face or a sullen mood. No. The contrast is for material things. If you get something material, you don't rejoice. Lose something material, you don't lament. Ultimate loss, materially speaking, is the body. If we cultivate the idea, I never was the body, I am not the body, I will never be anybody. I am the Sharirina. And therefore, that is the beginning of that process of becoming fully joyful. So we'll stop here. Thank you very much. Hare Krishna, Srila Prabhupada ki.